Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. The Life and Times of Walter Reuther by James Tenney recounts the events and social movements that have shaped modern America and the role Walter Reuther played in many of them. For over 30 years, Reuther and his United Automobile Workers Union were in the vanguard of voices advancing economic and social policies that raised the standard of living for many Americans. Reuther serves as a lens through which a period of labor advances, civil rights struggle, and hot and cold war are viewed. James received a B.S. in mathematics from Lafayette College in 1963. After graduation, worked at IBM Endicott for 5 years before leaving to obtain a Ph.D. in physics. He began an academic career that included adding an M.S. in computer science, retiring after 25-year tenure at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. Dr. James Tenney, author of The Life and Times of Walter Reuther, An Unfinished Liberal Legacy, is our guest on This Week in America. Doctor, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's great to be here.
This is such an important part of history and one that sometimes we look over, the role that Walter Reuther played. And I mentioned it as I'm going back and reading. It's like he was here during a very important part that shaped the United States, who we are today. Talk about the decision to write this book, The Life and Times of Walter Reuther. What prompted you to write the book?
Well, after I retired, one of the things I wanted to do was write. What got me into writing this book first, looking back on it, was probably because I was really upset at the way that the word liberal was being used as a pejorative.
Yes.
And not being adequately defended. So I wanted to do that. And as you were describing in the introduction there, Reuther was involved in many of the events of the 20th century, that particular period, the liberal period, particularly of the 20th century. So he seemed to be a natural choice to use as the protagonist, let's say, for this period of history. Excuse me. And also, I admired him for his stance on civil rights. I worked in a asbestos factory in over the summers when I was going to college, in the summer vacation period, and I had sympathy for the workers that were there. I regarded them more as my colleagues, more than the people that hired me. Let's
yes.
put it that way.
So that's
what brought me to this. I think in addition now, this is a republication of a book that was originally published in 2016. And I think, given the times and sort of the discussions we're having in these times, reflecting back on the history of that period, I think is important now.
Well, it is. And to realize the policies and how many of those policies have made life better for us. And in many cases, we're not even aware of that, where these policies came from. And there were people fighting for it. And Walter Reuther was in that category. The book is The Life and Times of Walter Reuther. The author is our guest, James Tenney. And if you're Googling that, that's T-E-N-E-Y-C-K. That's important because his website is jamestenneyck.com. All this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Let's go back to some of the early days that formed who he is. Let's go back to his trip to Germany, much of Europe, 1993, I believe he was there with his brother, that really shaped a lot of his opinion on workers, on unions. Talk a little bit about that period.
Well, he had been working at Ford before that, and because of his labor activities, was fired, and took that as a chance, to develop his interests, his labor interests more. So I think he arrived in Hamburg in February of 1932, just before the Reichstag fire. So he heard about the Reichstag fire, travels to Berlin. The person that he was referenced, was somebody that he could meet with by the professors that he had at what is now Wayne State. It was then Detroit City College.
Okay.
Had given a reference to somebody who turned out to be a Nazi. On the train, he met some socialist students and was living with them in some rent-sharing circumstances. Anyhow, he gets there during the Reichstag fire. Hitler comes to power. That apartment is raided. His friend were able to escape down the bedroom window on a rope ladder made with bed sheets, and the one they were particularly interested in, it was able to get to Amsterdam. The Ruther brothers were there with their American passports and told find other housing. So they stay with their mother's relatives for a period, and then begin a journey through Europe. And the main aspects of that journey were in France, there was the Second International Conference of the Socialist Party that was mostly bemoaning the fate that had happened to them and why they were rejected and what. And it was a very down, let's say, particular event. And he also traveled to Britain. There he met people that would become prominent in the Labour government after the war. In particular, Honoré Bevin, who was the health minister in the Attlee government, and his wife, Jenny Lee, who was the education minister, I guess it was, in Wilson's government that set up the open admission university system, the open system. So he did that. And then he was there really because he was going to work in the auto works factory in Gorky in Russia, in the Soviet Union.
Yes.
So he was waiting for about over a year for the visa for he and his brother to come from Gorky from Russia. Finally arrives at the start of 34, and he's in Russia for a year and a half. He leaves at in 1935, and for all of the money that he made in Russia, he was able to use. He was a very thrifty person throughout his life, so he had all this money that he couldn't take out of Russia. So he traveled extensively. He was I forget the Russian word for it, but it translated into outstanding worker, let's say, that gave him these
Oh,
travel
yes.
privileges, etc. And he returned via the Trans-Siberian Railroad and then through China and then Japan and worked his way back to America on a freighter.
It's amazing the story, the background of the topic of the book. The book is The Life and Times of Walter Reuther. Our guest is the author James Ten Eyck, TenEyck. His website, jamestenEyck.com. Book available wherever books are sold. Let's talk about the relationship during that period between autos and steel in the CIO. That is the other major union that's developing during this period. And then the merger of the AFL and CIO. It's a big story, but just briefly, some of the highlights of that and Reuther's role in that.
Well, autos and steel had a not a very friendly relationship. Steel was supposed to be the driving union that would begin the organization process. Steel was organized mainly. One of the main organizing events was John L. Lewis, who was the head of the coal miners union and the head of the CIO at the time, met in a restaurant with the one of the chairman. I don't think he was the chairman of the board of U.S. Steel, but with one of the board members of U.S. Steel. They got together. They set up the contract between steel and labor. U.S. Steel at the time, it was at the near the start of World War II. They saw there were going to be a big opportunity for making money because of the war, and they didn't want to have any labor troubles. So, their contract was sort of. Taken the excuse me, John L. Lewis took the contract that he developed in private, to the negotiators for the Steelworkers Organizing Committee, give this to Fairless, the president of U.S. Steel at the time. He'll sign it, and that's the contract. One of the big differences between autos and steel is that it was easy to shut down an auto plant. All you had to do was pull a switch to stop the assembly line,
yes.
And it were done. Whereas for steel, you had to debug the blast furnace. It took days, let's say, to tamp down the blast furnace and so forth. So autos were always more aggressive, let's say, than steel. And their cooperation, they ran into difficulties that they didn't really support one another in their strikes. Particularly steel did not support auto in some of their strikes. And more particularly, it didn't always support Reuther in his strike on General Motors.
That's so much behind the scenes that comes alive in Dr. Van Eyck's book that really gives you an understanding of the early days of the labor movement in the country of Walter Reuther. The book of the title is The Life and Times of Walter Reuther, book available wherever books are sold. The author's website, JamesTenEyck.com. Let's talk a little bit about, which I was surprised, his role in the Peace Corps. He was instrumental. Talk about what he did there.
Well, he was the plan man. His earliest plan was the 500 planes a day that could be produced by the auto industry, which he debated with the on radio at the time. One of the later plans was the Peace Corps. The original version of the Peace Corps that he proposed in 1950-51, with little support, was through the UN. It was sort of a process where it was not going to be the usual representatives of the UN, but rather delegates, each of the countries, let's say, that were going to be involved in this would produce. And it was something like 18 people. I called it Noah's Ark plan, because there were two labor, two management, et cetera,
yes.
For up to 18. And the latter version was in 1956, was basically the version of the Peace Corps that emerged in the Kennedy administration. And he proposed that at a National Education Association meeting in 56 and several times later. He met with Kennedy during the campaign at Hyannisport and proposed, gave him his proposal for the Peace Corps. That Kennedy was all about missile gaps and so forth at the time. And Reuther pressed upon him that this would be a better, a more positive, let's say, aspect of what the Kennedy administration could look like. And so he did that. Interestingly, that Kennedy was there to talk with his economic advisors as well. And, Reuther, they didn't want to hear Reuther's ideas on the economy. So they went off, left him with Jacqueline. And her concern was security. He had, by that time, he had survived assassination attempts, and he had a bodyguard with him. And she was most interested in about having a bodyguard around all the time and the security aspects of the job that John was going to be
Yes, it's such a great behind-the-scenes look. It's a different look how many of us remember Walter Reuther, especially growing up during that era, the book and Life and Times of Walter Reuther. Time is going by so quickly, but a couple more topics I wanted to discuss here. Civil rights is important, too. What was his role in the early days? Because he was there during really rough times, important landmark times in the civil rights battle.
Well, on stage, you saw him at many of the different civil rights events. You saw him at mainly at the March on Washington in 1963. And one of his roles in that was that there was a lot of disagreement about how that event was going to go off. There were worries about what was going to be said. In particular, there were worries about John Lewis's speech that was more militant, let's say, than a lot of the other people could wanted to hear.
Yes.
In particular, that would have been the Bishop of Washington, who was refusing to appear at the event unless Lewis changed his speech. And Lewis was talking about marching like Sherman through Georgia peacefully, nonviolently anyway, to achieve civil rights. And, the tone, let's say, of Lewis's speech was modified, mainly at the assistance of Reuther, who was sometimes thought of as acting as Kennedy's, man on the scene, let's say. Reuther gave his speech and followed, he had to follow Lewis, he was basically the only white speaker on the stage, except for the, the priests and the rabbis and, the other people that were doing invocations, etc.
It's a fascinating life that was led by Walter Reuther. The book is The Life and Times of Walter Reuther. It gives you more insight into a name, I'm going to say almost a forgotten name in history, the role that he played in the early days. And it's come back to life because of the author, our guest, James Teneyck, T-E-N-E-Y-C-K. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You talk about his role in the American century and what a key part of that he was. Talk briefly about the importance of that.
Okay. Well, actually, my part on the American century was one of the first chapters in the book. And it doesn't really, it's basically before the time of Reuther. I look at the beginning of the 20th century, particularly the decade before and after the year 1900. And, it's a leap into modernity. We had the automobile, the airplane, the wireless, the movies. All of that came to life in those two decades, etc., including flush toilets in the houses, let's say, which were mostly not many of the houses, particularly the more rural houses, had indoor toilets at the time. So it was a leap into modernity, some of the aspects of it was the American century was also because I took the event of 1901 when Queen Victoria dies and McKinley is assassinated, and America had already really outpaced Britain in terms of its economy and so forth. But it sort of marked a transition from one era, to the other. And also the attitudes in America, the anti-Semitism, which was revealed, not only, by people like Ford and so forth, but Henry Adams, talking one of his articles about how it depressed him or so forth to see the Jew particularly the Eastern European Jews, let's say, in the costumes or the clothing and so forth that they wore. There was an awful lot of anti-Semitism. One of the people of this period was a man named Madison Grant. He had the name of first and last name of two presidents.
Yes.
He wrote the book, The Passing of the Great Race. And in The Passing of the Great Race, he laments that the white race, the Anglo-Saxon Teutonic white race in particular, was being overrun by the immigrants and so forth that were coming from all over. And he was recommending that, first of all, sterilization. The first victims should be the criminal, the mentally insane, and then maybe some of the weaker individuals. And then going off into perhaps, some of the less desirable races, if we can eliminate them, that would be one of the ways of preserving, let's say, the great race. It's almost like going back to Shockley, in his gene bank. That book was reprinted in several times in many different languages. It got endorsements from Tom Buchanan, the fictional Tom Buchanan, who was reading a version of it to Nick and Daisy at the beginning of The Great Gatsby. It was endorsed by Teddy Roosevelt, a capital book, you know, with you know, some ideas that you know, should redefine our sensibilities, etc. And it was also endorsed by Hitler, who said, you know, the book was gave me much inspiration in Mein Kampf. So it was, you know, some of the ideas and so forth of the beginning of the 20th century, you know, we try to forget about, that this wasn't really us.
And I think that's with Walter Reuther, it's interesting where he was able to take some of the positives and sort of like, now what? And he was able to enhance those and eliminate those aspects that you just talked about, that were not us, not who we are as a country, not who we want to be as a country. A fascinating conversation. A couple minutes left in the program. Let's sort of jump to the end here. You have a chapter, The End of an Era. I'd like to talk about succession. What is left to the legacy of Walter Reuther, and did he prepare adequately for the labor movement after he was gone?
Well, I don't know that he could have prepared any more adequately, but no, he didn't. You asked me before about his involvement in the merger of the AFL and CIO. That was a disaster for the CIO. He did it because of fearing it's going to happen anyway, that Steele is going to go back to the AFL. You know, his involvement in the civil rights, I was talking about the more positive aspects of it. You know, the white of the time, Henry Ford, Walter Reuther, were looking to form the black man into their image of what the black man should be. They were trying to remake the black man. The positive aspects of Reuther's involvement in civil rights are plenty, but there were the negative aspects that he was very slow in creating black leadership and so forth within the UAW itself. It became an embarrassment around the time of the March on Washington. So there was that. Reuther's aspect of, I described this before as like the movie, Guess Who's Coming for Dinner?
Oh, yes.
Where they had to make Sidney Poitier, not only in terms of, you know, a decent guy that was trying to marry the daughter of Spencer Tracy, but he was this exceptional doctor who was not only a doctor, but a world-known doctor, et cetera, through the UN. You know, to an extent, that was what a lot of the white liberals of the time, and maybe still, were trying to do. We have to make the white, make the black man into what we would like the black man to become. And you know, the problem with the union was who's going to take over? You know, the original people that were striking at Flint and other places in the 1930s. We're older now, you know, we're pretty comfortable. The union had provided them with a pretty good middle class life. And who were the people to take the union to the next stage? And it would have been the blacks would probably be the ideal candidate, more so than the student radicals of the 60s, some of them. But also you had the problem with you know, the industrial age was coming to an end, and we were going from an industrial society into a service-based economy, probably about 10 years before we were ready to do that with the technology that was available at the time. And, you know, globalization, you know, the companies were able to globalize, let's say, a lot easier than the unions were able to form some common front among them.
Yes.
With different wages and so forth. So there was a lot of problems. Reuther ended up leaving the AFL-CIO for the Teamsters, which was sort of an unhappy arrangement at the end of his life.
It's such a fascinating life, and again, one that really is lays the groundwork for so much of what we see in society today. The name of the book is The Life and Times of Walter Reuther. The author is James Ten Eyck, our guest on the program. I'm going to take a minute or so here at the end. He's written another book. Dr. Ten Eyck has written another book. This is a book of poetry called Footprints. And, Doctor, just a minute or so at the end, tell me about that and the relevance today. You've done such a beautiful job with that work, a drastic change in terms of the presentation, but a powerful message you have in your poetry as well.
Well, thank you, Rick. I guess what you're talking about is the very last poem in the book. I recognize it as a pretty inadequate job of it's not a very good poem. It's mundane and sort of, but I give the rationale for the poem. It's called Let Freedom Ring. It's about a way of drawing up support for the war in Ukraine, which I consider to be a pivotal moment in history right now between autocracy and democracy. That democracy is on the back leg, the back foot, anyway, right now. That there's a lot of different autocratic movements throughout the Western world, in the United States as well. And, the cost and sanctions and so forth to the West, I foresaw as being a greater problem than it would be to the Russians, who have one system of government, one spokesman, et cetera, and are more used to doing without, let's say, than people in the West, particularly people in the United States, and particularly the short attention span, let's say, of the people in the United States. We do have a pretty short attention span. So if we don't continue to support the Ukrainians, then it's the Russians would be likely to prevail. And the effect of Russia prevailing would be that NATO is going to be reduced. It's not necessarily a question of whether we're going to be able to keep on supporting NATO, or whether NATO is just going to dissolve, basically. Yes. That they can't see that we have the strong support, and it's going to be something of lesser of a value for the nations in NATO than it would be.
Well, you called attention to that in such a touching way. I love what you've done with the poetry and some of the poetry recalling pleasant memories of your wife, Veronica, some of her later struggles with health. Dublin, and those special memories, all of that is in the book Footprints.
Yeah, that's the better poetry. The thing at the end is, more of an appeal.
Well, and we all need that, and it's done in a unique manner, and it gets us thinking, and we sometimes need to do more thinking than we're doing now, and you help us, you will lead us to the thought table by doing that. It's so well done, and you'll find information on Footprints, of course, on his website, jamestenike.com. Book available, that book, wherever books are sold, as is the main book of the discussion today, The Life and Times of Walter Reuther, and Unfinished Liberal Legacy by James Ten Eyck. That's TENEYCK. His website, jamestenike.com. Book available at Amazon, all of the usual places. I thank crown888press.com for arranging that conversation with Dr. Ten Eyck on the program today. And as new books come available, you'll find information on his website as well. Doctor, it's been a pleasure. The time really has gone by quickly. So much more we could have talked about, but a very impressive book, The Life and Times of Walter Reuther. Thank you for spending some time with us on the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Rick. I enjoyed it.
It has been our pleasure. And once again, the book is available wherever books are sold. I'll direct you to the author's website, jamestenike.com, EYCK. You're listening to This Week in America. By the way, you go there, you'll be able to link on directly to Dr. Ten Eyck's website. We're listening to This Week in America, and there's more on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.